Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. This show is a World Cup preview. And joining me for that, getting top billing after unfortunately getting bottom of the pile last time, is Shane Lees.
Hello.
See, I do remember. I do remember you being upset not getting the top billing.
I'm much more happy now.
Yeah. And I'm returning and getting that last, you know, the width you get at the end of credits, because they're a big name, is Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
It's good to have you back, Richard.
Oh, I'm the main event.
I think the show pretty much is over after you've said good evening. That, it can't be topped after that point. I'm warm. I'm very warm. I don't like a warm.
I've just been the 20-minute run, so I'm pretty knackered.
Yeah, but that's your own damn fault. I don't want to be warm. I haven't done anything to make myself warm.
Do you not feel warm hearing Richard's good evening? Because I do.
That's a different kind of warm.
Yeah, it's moist.
Not... Yes, it's a more intimate kind of warm.
Beckham. Into Sheringham. And Solskjaer has done it! Leicester City have won the Premier League. Goals against. Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is! Frank De Boer singing out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant!
As I say, we're going to preview the World Cup, but first of all, I want to get your thoughts on the news that the VAR will be used at the World Cup, but in a slightly different format to how we've seen it used in England. The VAR referee is allowed to intercept and tell the referee if he's got a decision wrong. Any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Because think about it, it's going to go one of three ways. Either VAR will add to the World Cup and be an improvement, it will improve the refereeing decisions. B, it will be more or less, you know, no point to it. It will just sort of be there but not really have any kind of real influence on the game. Or C, it will be an absolute disaster. And all three of those things are actually good things. Because if it does really well, then everyone will be looking at it and going, oh, actually, maybe there is a way we can do VAR. And maybe the Premier League can do VAR. If it's basically non-consequential, then again, suddenly it's, oh, okay, maybe it's not as big of an impact as we thought it is. And if it's terrible, it will actually make them pull their fingers out and sort it out and basically just go to a rugby-based system, which is, my God, what we should have been doing in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Richard?
I can see that at some point it's going to affect the England team and it's going to be the result England go out and the tabloid headlines just go mental about it.
Yeah, but at the very least, if it's VAR, I mean, the decision was probably got right. I mean, they've only really bollocked it up about twice now, and I think that was one of them was because the camera got blocked off by a flag, and the other one was because the camera just stopped working. So, I mean, those are things that I don't reckon they'll get wrong at the World Cup.
I think who's in charge of the VAR?
Well, that'll be the referees.
There's a referee, like an extra referee, who will be part of the team, I suppose.
But like camera work and such like that, for the technology of it?
I would guess that's down to the standard FIFA, you know, the standard broadcasters' decisions. I don't know.
It's just if there's any possibility that the Russians will get involved in trying to rig things, then they will.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if they were going to do that, they'd bloody give it a go in some other way anyway. So I doubt it's going to come too much into it. And the thing is as well, one thing I always like to point out to people when they come up with conspiracies is conspiracies tend to become pretty damn difficult the more people you involved. This would have to involve the likes of NBC, the BBC, ITV, pretty much anyone who's got a cameraman. Everyone would have to be involved. So I think that's probably a bit unrealistic.
That's about 200 million people involved in it. They managed to get involved in that.
In what?
The American elections.
Yeah, but that's a pretty damn different kind of situation. And that wasn't really tampering, for all those people who say it's tampering. That was just putting out propaganda. We've been doing that for about 400 years, so let's not really get on our high horses about that.
I think quite an important factor with this VAR is the fans inside the stadium will see on screens what's going on after the referee's made his decision so as not to influence him. But I think that's something that was really lacking when we saw it in England, that, you know, if you were at the ground, you had no idea why a ref had reached a decision. I think that's quite an important factor.
Yeah, that was a bit of an oversight, because obviously I think what they did when they brought in VAR was they were mainly thinking about the fans watching it on TV, which does show a little bit of the evolution of the game, because when obviously the play stops, TV companies are going to be showing replays, trying to figure out what's happened before the referees do. But obviously, if you're a fan in the crowd, you've no idea what's going on. You've just got some referee, you know, talking to himself from the looks of it. It was an obvious decision that needed to be made. It's part of, you know, cricket has incorporated that, rugby's incorporated that. It's pretty much unanimous with these kind of video officials now that the fans actually get to see what's going on. It's a little bit baffling that it took them this long to realise that they shouldn't be doing things radically different. They should basically just stick to the same core concept that near enough every other sport that's done this is implemented. Football is not so unique that it won't work. So yeah, that's a pretty damn good decision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll move on from VAR. First of all, I want to bring up England. I know we spoke at them in some depth in a recent show, so I don't want to make it to the whole show about England. But won the last two friendlies, 2-0 against Costa Rica and 2-1 against Nigeria. How hopeful do you feel? Can we win the World Cup or not?
We're not going to win it.
Have a positive World Cup then.
Yeah, I think we can come out of it in a better state than we've come out of other World Cups recently. I feel better about the current status of England's football than I did even in the golden generation.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're on is it's potentially a very good situation. Expectations are low. Nobody's really got too many feelings one way or the other about the England team at the moment. So we think, right, if we even slightly overachieve, then suddenly things are slightly more positive. Things are, you know, a lot more positive. Young team, it's very easy that the narrative can turn. And we've already seen that. I think the media has actually, people have been saying about in the media with Sterling and all of that a lot. I think the media has been getting more behind England than it has done at previous tournaments. You just look about the amount of positive stuff about Southgate that's coming out. But the problem is what happens if it doesn't go better than expected? It's a real possibility it's not going to go better than expected. I think England almost cannot tolerate the levels of apathy and keep it going, try and keep things going the way they are, especially with things like selling off Wembley. I think the apathy in the game for, you know, England international football is at a shocking level. People are talking about low expectations. People just don't really care that much. They've almost accepted England going out. There's almost no real optimism, and that isn't a positive thing. A positive thing is if we're coming into a bit like what Belgium were a few years ago, really hoping things can go well, but kind of still accepting that you're Belgium and things aren't probably going to go amazingly. As I said, it has to go very well for us to come out in a more positive position than what we are in. No. I think, but I don't realistically see that happening.
Yeah, but to beat expectations now in this country, like, the expectation for England nowadays is that they don't even get it out of the group stage.
I think that's our pessimistic expectations, you know, almost that gallows humour thing. But I think most people, I'll put it this way, the expectations is at what level you can go out and people aren't disappointed. I think if we reach the quarterfinals and go out, people aren't disappointed. I think if we go at any stage before that, people are a bit like, yeah, we probably should have done more there, especially with the way these groups have lined up.
I guess it depends on the calibre of the opponent.
The success.
It depends on the calibre of the opponent, though, surely. If we obviously the group stage you'd expect with Panama and Tunisia is a bit of a gimme. If we then go out to, you know, a Germany, if we happen to draw, you know, a Germany or an Argentina or someone and go out to that team down the line, we can accept that.
We know we're not going to do that. We're going to go out, because to reach the quarterfinal, we're going to have to go up against Poland, Senegal, Colombia, or Japan. We'll be expecting to beat every single one of those. We go out to one of them, and it's a disaster again.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Then we reach the quarterfinals, and yeah, there we can go up against a better team. And if we go, that's what I'm saying, if we went out to a team like Germany or someone like that in the quarterfinals, people go, yeah, okay, they're a better team than us. Quarterfinals, I suppose that's an improvement on what we've been doing. What I'm saying is we've got to reach that level first. Even that's not really a positive thing. That's kind of like par of the course. What I'm saying is, basically, for this tournament to be a success, we've either got to go out really valiantly in a quarterfinal against a better team, or we've got to reach the semi-final. Because that middle of the road, the quarterfinals, is we're never going to have played a team that was so good that we're looking at it and going, oh, we actually had an exciting time. Because that's what the public needs. It needs an exciting game. Something like a Germany, something like that. But what have we got? We've got Panama, Tunisia, and Belgium. Belgium are a good team, but you know, it's Belgium and no one cares about Belgium, not even the Belgians. and that's just talking about their country in general. It's just a non-country. And so that's the issue we have.
England have won since 1996.
Not that many.
This is including the Euros as well.
Go on.
Six.
Yeah.
None of them against the top nation either.
This is what I'm saying. If we go through the group, which is expected, okay? We're expected to go through group. Maybe we go through second. We then go up against a team like Poland or Colombia in all probability. If we go out then, it's a disaster. Going out against a team that's worse than us, we've gone out again, only getting through an easy group. You can see how that narrative's going to go already. We go out in the group stage, of course, that's a disaster, no matter which way you swing it. We go out in the quarterfinals, and we go up against a decent team, the likes of, you know, France or Argentina or something like that, and everyone goes, all right. But no one's really going, oh, you know, we did pretty well in this tournament. That's a real improvement. We go, yeah, we played some easy teams. The first hard team we went up against, we lost. But we reach the semi-finals and it's a success. This is what I'm saying. There's low expectations. But the way this has worked out for us is we actually have to achieve pretty damn well for people to be a bit more positive about England, I think.
Okay, take your scenario. Let's say we get through the group. Say we're second. We have a draw with Belgium, finish second, play Poland, and then we go out to a top team or whoever. Does the playing style then come into account? If we play really well and we're playing good quality attacking football, we're entertaining to watch, does that change the narrative?
Yeah, but it all depends how that actually goes. For instance, if we go up against Panama and Tunisia and we play really well and we play up against the Belgians and it's, you know, not so good because it's Belgium and they're actually a pretty damn good team, then all we'll be coming out of is saying, well, against teams that we're worse than, we play better than. And we know we do that from the qualifiers anyway. So one of my genuine worries about the tactical style we have with Southgate is that it's very customised to go up against teams we're worse than. It doesn't have the defensive rigidity to come up against teams who are going to attack us more than we're going to attack them. That's one of my big worries. And I can see the way this narrative can go. We go up against our first good team. We go out and they say, Gareth Southgate was tactically naive. Again, England can't do it. A tournament can't do it up against the big nations. All of it comes out again. I think we've been a little bit deceived because of how positive things have been. But we've been deceived into thinking it's positive simply because it's not negative. It's apathetic.
The England have got in the box at the moment don't lend themselves to being the defensive team at the moment.
No, of course they don't. But for me, I look at the way we're planning on lining up. We're planning on lining up with one central midfielder. And I think if we do that with our three-man defence up against the likes of Brazil and Germany, I think we're going to get shredded. Look at how we went against Costa Rica. Yeah, we won that game fairly comfortably. The moments Costa Rica suddenly started trying, they actually did start to trouble our defence. Pockets of space were being found. And that Costa Rica team weren't trying. They were not putting effort into it. You go into a tournament when the pressure's on, when these teams want to have a go at you, when they've got to win every single game because they've got their fans behind them. Again, I don't know how that goes. I think that if we play that exact same game against Costa Rica in a tournament, I think that's more likely to be maybe 1-0 us, probably more likely a draw. Because of the way that they actually were quite effective at attacking us, the way we defensively seemed to fold under the slightest pressure, and the way that it actually was very difficult to get goals, very difficult to get clear-cut chances. And I know that's only a friendly, but if we get to the end of this tournament and all of this has come true, I'm not going to be the only one who's seen that. Everyone's going to have seen that. It's going to have been pretty damn apparent how this all went. And suddenly we now got people, have the people in the media saying, you know, what actually has Gareth Southgate done? We were being quite positive about him, but all he did was retire a bunch of players. What I'm saying is this turns very quickly. And it all depends, really, I think, on whether or not we go out in the quarterfinals and who we go out to. Because I think if we go out in the quarterfinals to a good team, Southgate will keep his job. But I don't think that'll do anything for the apathy around England at the moment. I think that'll probably increase, if anything. We go out earlier than that, it's a disaster, and my God, it's just, at the very least there, if it's a disaster, maybe we need to actually genuinely look at reform again, what we're doing wrong, actually have an inquest that has some kind of result. And if we exceed, then we can get the excitement back into England football. But I think that's a hell of an ask for this team, because we are not, I don't think we're a top eight team in all of those teams. I don't think we're a top eight team there. I think there's a lot of teams that are better than us. There are teams who are maybe not as good on paper, but they are actually genuinely better team units. And, yeah, I worry a little bit because as much as I think, you know, I'm optimistic about England, I'm hopeful that England can do well, I can see how quickly and easily this can implode.
For me, I think you've got to look at what the strengths are of the England squad and first 11-wise. We've only really got Eric Dier as that holding midfielder. You've got, and then going forwards, you've got sort of four or five players that you all want to fit into the team, and you've got to take out some really decent ones to fit in a a lesser player that's more defensive, perhaps. But, you know, going forward, we were perhaps the Liverpool of the international scene at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that point, but it's also worth pointing out that the last time teams tried to do that, probably the best example of it is Brazil against Germany. I know it was a freak result. Brazil piled forward their, you know, attacking players because they knew that's where they were better. They got shredded by, of course, a Germany brilliant on the day. What if something like that happens? And it's really not out of the question that it could happen, because you look at our defence. You look at our defensive midfield as well. What happens if we do go up against a team, a top team, who are on their performance? I think we could easily ship 4-5 more goals, because I don't think we are at all confident in defending.
But we could also... What also could happen if we hit the ground running and we're the ones that are putting... You know, we could do the same and put 4-5 past a decent team.
I'm not saying that that's not possible. And, yeah, I'm very hopeful we come into that first game against Tunisia, a properly good defensive team unit, and we put 3 past them. I'm thinking, right, great. And the country's going to get really behind England if we suddenly go out and do that. Problem is, I just don't see that happening. I just don't see that we've gone up against Nigeria, we've gone up against Costa Rica, and, yeah, we've won both games. I didn't see that we really got any kind of confidence boost from it. And I haven't seen in qualifying for that the players have really been confident. They talk about, you know, it's a calm dressing room and it's a positive dressing room. I haven't actually seen that translate onto a pitch where it's really positive play, where it's really aggressive play. I've still not seen that actually translate onto the pitch at any point. Mm. And I worry, we're going to go up against a team like Tunisia. I don't think it's their first World Cup, but I don't think they've been to many. They're going to be well up for it. Panama are going to be well up for it. Belgium have got expectations on them and a very, very good team, even if their manager's incompetent. We're not going to be going up against teams. Like, this is why when we were doing this podcast before the draw was made, and I said I wanted the likes of Australia, Japan, teams like that. Teams who got used to going to a World Cup, losing but enjoying the occasion. We don't want to go up against teams who are actually kind of hoping or expecting something. Because those are the teams I feel like we do not perform against. We perform well against the teams who, well, a little bit like we are in this current tournament, are kind of not expecting an awful lot to happen, nor are they particularly hoping on it.
Mm-hmm. I want to try and move on from England. Shane, you sort of mentioned in passing, you thought Martinez was tactically an incompetent manager, you said, I think. Do you agree with that, Hero?
Well, the fact that he's left out one of... like the top 5 midfielders in the world.
Nainggolan.
Yeah.
So yes, he may be off field a bad influence. He may be not a role model for kids because he smokes, etc. He is still one of the best complete central midfielders on the entire planet at the moment.
He's argued it's for tactical reasons because he doesn't fit the system because they play a 3-4-1-2 and he's kind of an in-between. He's in between a central midfielder and a number 10. He's played in the number 10 more for Roma. When you've got likes of De Bruyne and Hazard, is there an argument there? But then, I don't know, you can argue...
Hazard in the squad, but you've also got the likes of Chadli in the squad. You've got Fellaini in the squad. What is it that Fellaini's doing in that squad that Nainggolan can't do?
To be fair, Fellaini is basically the Belgian Danny Welbeck. Always turns up in a Belgian shirt. I mean,
yeah.
I do agree with what you're saying. I can kind of see.
Isn't that well?
Yeah, I can kind of see why he would leave him out. But then again, if he picks him, he starts. So that's where it kind of becomes mental for me, because he is probably their best central midfielder. Because I'd count De Bruyne as an attacking midfielder, so I'd say, yeah, he's the best central midfielder. I don't really understand it.
If he's not picking Nainggolan for tactical reasons because he thinks that, you know, Axel Witsel and Fellaini are a better central midfield pairing and he's got Nainggolan on the bench, could you see an argument that he might cause, you know, anger and disharmony amongst the Belgium team as he maybe made a sensible decision? Could I defend it on that basis?
Well, they don't really like him in the first place. None of them have exactly been positive about Martinez. Wasn't it De Bruyne who came out and basically said he's an idiot?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he criticised his manager's tactics. Yeah, he did. He did. And someone else did as well. I think it was Vertonghen who had a bit of a pop at him after a game as well. Go on, sorry.
Belgium fan. You're a Belgian fan and you're going to like the 80th minute in the knockout stage. You're losing 1-0, 2-1. you want a player like Nainggolan who's going to drag you through the game. You know, you saw him against Liverpool where, you know, they were getting battered. And Roma came back in that semi-final.
I completely agree with you. I was just displaying Martinez's arguments. I think it's an absolute disgrace that he's not in the squad, personally.
I personally think that if Belgium win this tournament, that's got to be he'll be the worst manager to have ever won a World Cup.
You say if they win the tournament, how far do you see them going? Do you see them being serious contenders? I mean,
I think they are a team of very talented individuals, and we've seen that sometimes that can work out. Very occasionally it can work out. Normally it's the solid teams that do things more than a team of individuals. I don't think they'll play for Martinez. Mm. But if those players out there can start playing for each other, which I think they have shown signs of being able to do that in their games, then I think they've got a chance. It basically depends on if they have a French or Dutch style implosion. And so far there's no real signs of that. I think even with a bad manager, if you've got the right players, you can do things. You look at Portugal winning the Euros. When you've got the right players, you can do things. When you've got leaders in that team, you can do things. And they do have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look throughout that squad, and Nainggolan aside, that every single position has got top quality in it.
Mm.
You know, the defence, you've got like Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Courtois in goal. You know, De Bruyne, Hazard, midfield.
Lukaku's in good form.
Lukaku up front. You know, even the likes of like Carrasco and Mertens. It is a top squad.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of individuals.
Mm-hmm. Shane mentioned them in passing, so we'll move across to Group B, where Portugal... the manager, Fernando Santos, who's obviously a hero after winning the Euros with them, he's made quite a few changes from the squad there. Eder, who scored that winning goal, and Nani, unfortunately, don't make the squad. It's a slightly shifted squad. I think main weakness for them is at central defence, a few ageing players in there. Good side, do you think? Do you think they've got any chance of causing a few surprises?
I'd say no, but then again, they won the bloody Euros and nobody really saw that coming. When you've got the best player in the world, you've got a chance of doing anything. I don't think that is one of the stronger teams in this tournament, but they weren't one of the stronger teams in the Euros. I know obviously we talk about England, we say it's got to be a team unit and things like that. When you've got players like Ronaldo, anything is really possible, and they've got good young players in there, and yes, they've got some experienced heads in there too. I do think they've got a better squad than we do.
Mm.
I think especially when you look at their strength in central midfield, and that is more than anything where the games get won and lost, then they are as good as, you know, at least maybe not quite as good as the likes of France or Croatia in central midfield, but they're certainly damn good. They've got pace going forward, and they've got some sensible heads at the back. Again, it's one of those cases, if they put everything together, there's no reason why they can't have a very, very good run. But it's really got to all go right for them. They can't do what the likes of Germany and Brazil have done at some tournaments where they coast a couple games. They'll have to have everything go right.
Do you think
the one thing I have for Portugal at the moment is based on what's happening club level wise in Portugal with Sporting Lisbon.
Mm.
And there's quite a few players in that squad from the team that are currently looking like they're walking out on the contracts. And I wonder how much of that will play on their minds with the national squad.
Mm. Some of them might even be going over to Wolves, I hear. I was a bit shocked to see Ruben Neves didn't make the squad. I know it was only the Championship, but he absolutely ripped apart that division, and I'd have loved to see him play at the World Cup. But as Shane said, there's a lot of strength in their central midfield.
Yeah, the one I'm particularly looking forward to seeing is Bruno Fernandes, who's one of the 14 Lisbon players who's possibly leaving and joining the Premier League. He looks an exceptional talent.
Mm-hmm. Also in their group is Spain. My notes earlier said that their manager, Julian Lopetegui, signed a contract until after Euro 2020, but that's out the window, evening that he's signing for Real Madrid. Do you think him announcing that before the World Cup?
I think that's a bad time to announce it myself. I can't see how then you're going to have some players that will be thinking, well, is his mind fully on the manager always tells his players to properly get everything sorted before the World Cup for which they're playing for, and don't let it be a disruption. And he does it right on the eve of the World Cup as a manager.
I think the advantage Spain have is they have got a lot of leaders in that team. A lot of players you can almost say, you know, the younger ones or the ones who've not got the tournament experience, ignore that. Doesn't matter. We're out here playing for Spain. This is what we're doing. The manager, it doesn't really matter. He's going to tell us how to play the game, and we do his tactics. But at the end of the day, it's up to us. You look at that team. You've got Azpilicueta, and he's a leader. You've got Piqué, and he's a leader. Ramos, he's a leader. De Gea is a leader. Reina, a backup keeper, he's a leader. Busquets is a leader. Iniesta's a leader. Koke is a leader. I mean, it is a team full of leaders. And when you've got that, I think you can have a weaker manager. It's kind of the reason why I do think Belgium could do something, because they have got a similar situation. They've got leaders across the pitch. You can sort of have a weaker manager. You can kind of ignore him to a certain extent, you know, when he's trying to motivate the team. They'll be more about motivating each other rather than anything else. And so long as, you know, he's got enough focus, the manager, to, you know, be able to do things tactically properly, then I do think this is the strongest team in the tournament. It's just whether or not it will actually turn that way on the pitch. I think there's no team that comes close to Spain's level of talent in every position.
My concern for the Spain team is, as you say, this player is a leader, this player is a leader. There's a lot of alpha males in that team now, and it reminds me a lot of the England team from the golden generation, where you had that sort of north-south divide. You had like John Terry Brigade, and you had the Rio Ferdinand Brigade in the team, and you've got that between like the Real Madrid and the Barca thing with Ramos and Piqué. I know that they're sort of the centre back partnership, but they clearly don't like each other. Sort of fragment a bit in the squad.
It's obviously there's a lot of potential for that. Most obvious examples where that's happened before is France, where they had a similar situation. A lot of leaders, and when they start to disagree with the manager, when they also start to disagree with each other too. I think what Spain have got as an advantage is they've got a lot of tournament experience. They've got players who've been used to this. It's one of those ones. I think it's a weird one. They could either win the tournament or be one of the first big teams to go out. It very much depends how they adjust to this situation. If they can get their big players firing, if they can get things going and start playing the way we know the Spanish can, I don't think anyone's better than them. So it all depends how much they can keep their heads. And Spanish aren't great for that historically, so hopefully that turns out again.
Well, just when you look at the Spanish squad, some of the players that have missed out as well, like Morata and Bellerin, Marcos Alonso, and numerous others as well who've missed out on the squad, it just shows how strong they are. The options up front, there's a bit of debate about who's going to start. Costa's probably the most recognised striker here. Aspas and Rodrigo have both had good seasons in Spain, so that starting striker position's up for grabs. Or even if they don't play a striker as such, or play someone like Isco or Asensio as like a false nine.
Yeah, I think that's probably the weakest position is the striker role.
But even with those options...
I think when your weakest option is Diego Costa, you've got a decent team.
When you look at other options, like the upfront options, like I don't think they're of the levels of you know, Lewandowski or Gabriel Jesus, Neymar, Harry Kane.
And I should just give Iniesta a quick shout out. It's probably his final tournament for Spain. He's moving to Japan, plays club football, but what a player he's been over the years. It'd be nice if he could get some sort of send off.
Yeah, top player.
So obviously Portugal and Spain, it's sort of similar to the England group. You expect those two to go through, the other two teams in the group being Morocco and Iran.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some decent players. Morocco's team is actually surprisingly strong. In Iran, they've got a very good centre-forward. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. He's top scorer in the Eredivisie. So they've got a couple of decent players. If all goes as it should do, then yeah, those two teams should get blown away. But I wouldn't be surprised if Morocco put up a good fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Iran have got two fairly decent players, haven't they?
Yeah.
And go on, I'm going to try and find the names of them now.
I know one of them is Azmoun, and... the other guy, his name begins with J. There's a K in there somewhere, and a Benesh, I think. So I'm not even going to try and put that all together. I'll just sound obscene.
Carlos Queiroz is still in charge, isn't he? The United assistant.
Yes.
I know he's done a really good job with their defence, from what I've read.
Yeah, Jahan Bakash has scored 21 goals and 12 assists in the Dutch league this year.
I was going to say, but there is, it's not as cut and dry as I think some people are making out. It's not like they've got two Panamas in there where you think if they get a point, they're going to celebrate about, like, you know, it's, they've won the whole tournament. But if it all goes to form, Spain and Portugal top that group. Spain, I think, should top that group ahead of Portugal. But if one of those teams is off, we've been saying the Spanish, they could be having an off tournament. It's very, there's potential for that. Portugal, again, if things don't all run together, if, you know, they've got the off-field troubles and so on, I wouldn't be surprised if Morocco did manage to nick one of those qualification spots, because they're a very tidy team. And Iran, if they can get their attacking done and they're as solid defensively as Quiroz can make them, then again, all it takes is you get one opportunity and you lock up for a game 1-0. Mm. You're suddenly almost there. So I don't think it's quite a clear group as everyone's making out, but it should go to form.
Okay. I think especially with Spain and Portugal playing their game first, you know, if one of them comes out of that having given the other a bit of a battering, that team that's taken the battering, you know, the morale's down, they could be fighting for it then.
I think Morocco have got that real chance, because if Spain beat Portugal and Morocco beat Iran, suddenly Spain are going to probably go and put several past Iran, and Iran have got Portugal. And I think that they've got Portugal at a much later date. They've suddenly got a lot more time to go and do something with it. So I think, I think Morocco will be the team if it's any of them. But yeah, I don't see it happening personally, but it wouldn't shock me.
Okay. I want to go on to the to talk about the hosts, Russia in Group A, ranked 70th in the world. I believe they're the lowest ranked team ever to host the World Cup at the time going into the tournament. Some of the Russian media aren't behind them, saying, one paper saying it will be a heroic performance to get to the last 16. And Putin said that criticised his national team for not getting any big results in the last few years. Thoughts on them? Are they going to do anything at this World Cup with the home advantage?
I mean, the first thing I think is worth saying is one of the reasons why they are one of the lowest ranked teams is because when you're a host, you only play friendlies. That's worth less for getting up in the rankings.
Yeah, Brazil got to about 20th, didn't they, before
that? So it's a standard thing for them to be one of the lowest ranked teams. That being said, that Russia squad does not have an awful lot about it. It's a weird situation, Russia, because you think they're one of the obvious most biggest sleeping giants in football. If they got it all going, they could be a footballing superpower. But they never quite seem to get anywhere near it. And there's never really any good explanation for it, because they've got a hell of a lot of investment in football in that country. We're not just talking about stadiums, we're talking about the Russian government does invest a lot in grassroots football. In fact, I think, I can't remember where I saw it, but they are actually one of the top nations for investing in football. And they just can just never seem to get it going. Maybe it'll come further down the line, I don't know, but they've never really got too much about them. And I think they have a similar problem to us, if they've never really got an approach, a style that seems to be set. And I don't think you can ever turn up to a tournament with that mentality and actually hope to achieve something. I think if they get out of the group, they'll have done very well. Egypt are a stronger side than them. Saudi Arabia have actually got a surprisingly decent team. We just don't know about it because they're not allowed to leave Saudi Arabia. And Uruguay are obviously the strongest team there.
Expect Uruguay and Egypt to make it out of that group.
Even with Salah potentially not being fit, initially at least?
It's still a better squad. It's still a better team. You've got more players playing at a better level. I think what it comes down to is actually it's an oddly quite balanced group. Mm. Saudi Arabia, Russia, Egypt, they're all at a similar level for their, you know, their average player. I think Egypt have obviously got more stars. They've got more, you know, better players. But then even you look at some of their other talent, you know, the likes of Sobby, who's, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, the guy who's at Stoke, everyone knows he's clearly got something about him. They've got Higazi and his other fella, Morsi. He's another one of those ones who's quite a talent, El Mohammedi. They've got players who are playing in established leagues. They've got players who are established talents. And you look at Russia, outside of players playing in Russia, there is not a lot about that team. I think there's what, two players in that entire squad who are playing outside of Russia? And the rest of them, it's a lot of the same old names that we've been hearing before for Russia. Same old names who've never done anything for that team. It's not even like they've got a whole bunch of Danny Welbecks where you can go, right, they're all crap, but at least they turn up for their country. They haven't even got that situation.
Yeah, you're right. They've got two players. They've got the third choice goalkeeper plays in Belgium, Gabulov, and Cheryshev, I believe, plays in for Villarreal, I think it is, Spain. But again, yeah, you're right. It's all Russian league. That Golovin looks a talent, and it's a bit of a shame for them that Kokorin, who's one of their big like hopes, is out for the World Cup as well. I think Russia will make it through behind Uruguay.
Now, that Zagnev was always considered a decent player, but never really sort of pushed on.
Yeah. I think it says a lot that pretty much, with maybe the exception of one or two players, none of those Russian team would be guaranteed a starting spot in a mid-table Premier League club.
Yeah.
I mean, would even now they've gone down, would Zagoev get into Stoke's midfield? It sounds ridiculous, I know. But you look at some of those players and you think, right, who the hell could they actually play for? If they were to move abroad, who could they play for? That's one of the big problems they've got, is nobody really wants to have a go at this talent, because Russian talent's very unproven when it comes to playing in different leagues, and by and large they seem to fail. And they're not like so good in the first instance that you think, right, yeah, let's take that risk. And I think a big problem is going to come with them with their defence, because their defence is rubbish. I mean, it is genuinely crap. They got a half decent keeper in Akinfeev, but that defence, it comes up against the slightest bit of pace or trickery and it's going to collapse. It's awful. So I don't think even their slightly better midfielder attackers can save them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. I want to talk a bit about France, who for me are probably the strongest team on paper, especially in attack. The attacking options: Mbappe, Griezmann, Giroud, Lamar, Talvin, and Dembele. Could they do it? Could they win it?
I've got a strange feeling that France are going to do near enough nothing in this tournament. I can't explain it, because as you said, on paper that team is ridiculous, and we know that the depth they've got in that squad is just astounding. But I just have this strange feeling that they aren't going to play for Deschamps. I can just see that happening. It's clear that they don't really buy into what he's doing anyway. And I don't know. I don't see enough clear leadership in that team. And I think that's going to be an issue on the field. Yeah, I have a sneaky feeling that everyone's going to look at this tournament afterwards and go, well, bloody hell, how the hell did they fail that badly? They're pretty damn good.
I think it's pretty similar to the Belgian squad in that, as a squad, it's hugely talented, but it's one of them that's a manager that they just don't believe in.
Hmm.
I've got them down as winning it, but it's not due to the manager.
Yeah. Is it time for Pogba to step up and be a leader, do you think?
I think I know that a lot of people have got a lot of expectations on Pogba, and of course people know I'm not his biggest fan, but he's still a young player. He's not in the prime of his career. He's not 27 years old where you expect him to be leading that team out. He needs a bit more time. There are more experienced heads in that France team. They've got to take it on themselves to show people like Pogba how it's done at a tournament, because he has not had that many opportunities to see how it actually works at a tournament yet. Has he gone to a tournament? I don't think he has. I think it may be one.
He went to the Euros.
In the Euros, probably in
16.
Yeah. Late to his potential.
Yeah, I think for a player like Pogba, don't put all the pressure on him. Tell him, you go out and you do your thing, we know what you're good at, you're going to go out and do that. We leave the leadership of this team to more experienced players. We take a look at players like Lloris, we take a look at players like him, and we say, right, you're the leader here. Matuidi, again, he's an excellent leader. So I think you look at players like that, and that's who you say, right, you're the ones who are leading this team out, you're the ones who've got to be given the orders. Pogba, you're going to go out there and play. If they can have any success, they need players like Lloris and Matuidi to be able to lead that team, because the thing people are forgetting about this France team is it a young squad. This is a very young squad. They have not got that many experienced heads in there, and they've got a lot of players who I think there's a suspicion that they'll down tools if things aren't going well. So I think you've got to almost kind of give them that laissez-faire attitude. Let them go out and have fun. Let them go out and play the kind of football you know they can play. Because if you're too hard on them, I don't think there's enough players who are going to be out on that pitch who are going to be able to keep that spine together. And I think when you have someone like Deschamps in charge, I think that's where the issues can come for this France team. But then again, if they go out there and they just want to have fun, they want to play football, they want to play the best football they can play, again, there's not that many better teams in France out there, attacking-wise. But it's just one scary damn lineup. So if they can get that all working, then yeah, they've got every chance of winning it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, you look at that attack, like Griezmann, Mbappe, Lamar, Fekir,
Dembele.
Tovan. You know, Dembele, yeah.
Giroud.
It's frightening, the quality there. Pogba, I think Lampard summed it up perfectly a couple of weeks ago when he was interviewed about him, and saying he's talent-wise, he's far beyond anything Lampard ever was, but he just frustrates him so much that he just doesn't do the simple things right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he can turn and run past players so easily in central midfield, but then he'll be in front of his own box and just do something absolutely stupid every game.
Mm-hmm. The other teams in the group are Australia, Peru and Denmark. Not really expecting anything special from any of them. Anything of note you guys seeing? Any players of note or anything?
I mean, Denmark have got actually a pretty damn solid team. I'm expecting them to be able to come second in that group. Peru have got some very fancy players, some very good players in the likes of Farfan, Guerrero, who obviously is coming back from his drugs ban, which is a bit of an odd situation all in all. So they've got some good players there, but Denmark have a better team. They should be coming second in that group. I think they are actually, if we're talking about, you know, second teams, they're one of the more talented ones in this tournament. We know Denmark have been able to do it at a tournament before. I don't think it's out of the question that they can reach quarterfinals. I think they're a talented team. I think what they've got going for them is they're quite a disciplined team as well. And I think teams of that always tend to do quite a lot better than those teams full of individuals. They keep their structure even when things are going badly. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did quite decently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see Eriksen having a really good tournament.
Mm.
I think he's coming off a season where really a lot more people are sort of paying attention to what he does for Spurs.
Mm.
And I think he could really be coming out of this tournament as one of the players from it.
And yeah, you look at that team, it's kind of stacked with talent in the right areas. You've got the likes of Christensen, you know, for Chelsea, he's a really good player. Schmeichel in goal, we know he's a safe pair of hands. Simon Kjaer, he's another very talented player. Delaney, again, you've got players in there who are consistent, the likes of Delaney and Schürrle. And then up front, you've got some decent younger players, in the likes of Poulsen, Sisto. So, one of the most obvious ones is Kasper Dolberg. Everyone knows about him. So they've got the potential to actually do quite well. Obviously, it depends how they come into this tournament. I know we're going to repeat ourselves saying that, but it's a team that could safely do nothing. But also, if they reached a semi-final, I wouldn't be like, oh, what a big shock that is. It's like, actually, no, that's a solid team.
Mm-hmm. Group D, Argentina, the big side, the top seed in that group. The story's been around the goalkeepers. Sergio Romero's been out, has got an injury and will miss the World Cup. Caballero, it seems, is now the first choice. So a bit of a question mark there with the other two keepers not having any significant experience, really. I think Caballero's only got two caps himself.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think Argentina are the strongest team in that group. I think it's Croatia. Croatia's team is something else. I mean, you actually look at that team and it is crazy talented. Argentina, yeah, they got Messi. And as I said with Ronaldo, you got a player like that in there, you can do anything. But the rest of our team, top talent, yeah, they got lots of talent going forward, tons of that. It's central midfield and further back where they start to have problems. Banega is the only solid midfielder they have. And then you go into defence, you've got good defenders in the likes of Otamendi and Mascherano, but God, at a tournament, I don't know about a team. I see that as being a team, the first decent team they go up against. It's the first decent team that can actually attack them better than they can attack someone else. They're going to ship goals.
The funny
that
thing is it
barely qualified for this tournament, Argentina. That team is not half as good as people think it is.
Well, it scored 19 goals in the 18 games in qualifying, which seems unthinkable when you think you've got Higuain, Messi, Aguero, Dybala, Di Maria. 19 yep. goals in 18 games, so a goal a game.
Peru outscored them in the qualifiers. That's how you put it in perspective. This team is not coming into this on form. That is a team that is so top heavy it's ridiculous. You don't have keepers with experience. You've probably got only one leader in your defence, and that's 34-year-old Mascherano. I don't see that. That's not the best team in that group, let alone one of the best teams in that tournament. How's that team going to go up against Germany? Proper solid team unit like Germany, they'll rip them to shreds. The only luck they're going to have is if they go up against teams like them the whole tournament. Teams like, you know, Portugal, that's kind of the perfect game for them. And I look at that Croatia team, and that Croatia team has the best midfield in the world. I know that sounds ridiculous because we're talking about Croatia, but you've got a central midfield partnership. of Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic, that is the best midfield partnership in the world.
Yeah.
You've also got great players like Kovacic and Brozovic is a really solid talent. You've got Ivan Perisic going forward, Mario Mandzukic. Kramaric is having a great year in Germany. He's been doing great things. Defence, people talk about, you know, Croatia used to always have a very weak defence. Subasic is a solid goalkeeper playing for a Champions League team. Bissaka is another one of those players. Right back, he is, you know, taking on Dario Serna's boot, so to speak. He's a proper good right back. Strinic, okay, Strinic is nothing special, but we've also got Dejan Lovren and Vedran Kuluka, who we know, yes, they can be joke defenders from time to time, but they can also put in damn good performances, and they are big game players more than they are small game players. And this is all going to be big games for him. That team is very talented. They're, for me, the dark horses. Because if they can get things going, I don't think anyone's got a better midfield than them. They've got proven goal scorers and they've got talented defenders and a goalkeeper. They are as good as any of the other teams in it.
The only concern for me with the Croatia side is you take a player like Modric gets an injury and it's the big step down.
Yeah, they don't have the depth of the bigger teams. That's the obvious downside where it'll go. But again, it's a case of if everything goes right for Croatia. Yeah, we're talking about Denmark. If everything goes right for them, I can see them maybe reaching the semi-finals. If everything goes right for Croatia, I can see them winning this tournament. Would we agree with that?
I think that could be your Ukraine moment.
Oh, no, my Ukraine moment was worse. Ukraine was... that was me being a bit more provocative. Yeah, no way. They are not going to be as bad as Ukraine. And if they are, I'm sorry, Croatian fans, for downing your team, because it's all my fault otherwise.
I think it's a very good team. I think the stars would have to seriously align to see them win it.
Yeah, as I said, it's all got to go right for them, but... that is one of those teams for me that, one, I think they should be topping their group. And after that, they're going to be going up against probably the likes of Denmark or Peru. So you think, realistically, they should go through again against them. After that, Leicester won a league title. All you've got to do is come up against a good team on a bad day and you can do anything, especially if you're having a good day.
I think they need to get through the tournament injury-free. I think they've got a very good first 11, but after that, I think there's better squads in the World Cup.
Yeah, they can only really afford to lose players up front because it's only up front where they've got a bit of diversity.
The team that ends up winning the World Cup, though, tends to only have 11, 12 players play for them the whole tournament. It doesn't tend to be much rotation. It just seems to be they kind of get lucky and don't get any injuries or suspensions or anything. So is that a relevant argument would make?
Well, yeah, of course it is. Because, of course, you look at the likes of the Premier League, you know, it's the teams that win that but tend to play the fewest players. It's not a coincidence. But then again, you've got to have... I mean, it's different at club level. At club level, if you're getting consistent injuries, it's your own damn fault. You're doing something wrong in training. You're approaching the game wrong. No coincidence Arsenal constantly get the same kind of bloody injuries for all their players. International level, you've got 23 players for a limited time, it's more bad luck when it happens at that level. So they do need that little bit of luck to keep everyone fit, to keep everyone going. I think the good thing is they haven't really got too many players who are well known for getting injuries. So, as I said, if they get everything right, they've got an experienced team, they've got a lot of caps in that team. It's not a team full of young players, nor is it a team full of just old heads. That is a team that can go the distance.
I would say semis are to push for them.
I think Croatia will surprise people. I think they'll be the biggest overachievers, but I can't see them winning it. I think something like the semis would be very good. The other two teams, Iceland, who've got a lot of fans thanks to what happened at the Euros, and also Nigeria, who have, in most people's opinions, the best kit at the tournament. They've completely sold out everywhere, the Nigeria kits. Fancy either of them to go through at Argentina or Croatia's expense?
No.
No,
I've
got
Nigeria in my office sweepstake. I might as well just given away £2.
Yeah, I hate to sound bad, but African teams don't tend to do very well at these tournaments. And largely, again, without meaning to sound bad, it's because they tend to be focused more on the prize money that they're going to be getting for playing at all, rather than actually being a competitive side. And people can call me out on that one. Go look through the last couple of World Cups. There was always something about Ghana or Nigeria or one of them for almost refusing to play because they weren't going to get paid. That's kind of what they're here for, and it's understandable because for a lot of those players in that team, they're not going to be earning the big money. They're not going to be those top players playing in the top leagues, so there's only a handful of them who are going to be at that level. So I can understand where that comes from, Yeah, okay, Argentina, it's possible they could have a terrible tournament. I wouldn't see that as being completely ridiculous. It has to be pretty damn terrible for Nigeria to go through.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to kind of dash through the last few groups. First of all, Brazil in Group E. Neymar's back. He's out injured for PSG for several months. Tite, their manager, has done a very good job as coach. Is everything all coming together for Brazil? Can you see them having a strong World Cup? I saw, according to a statistics, a simulation study, that they're the favourites to win it. I think it was about 1 in 5 chance they had of winning it.
I don't think they've got a chance of winning it.
Why not?
I think that team is not half as good as people think it is. I think it's a similar position to Argentina. And it's also worth remembering a little thing. South American teams do not do well in Europe. Look at the history of it. I don't know if a South American team has ever won in Europe.
Yeah, they have. Brazil won it in Sweden.
Okay, so we're talking, was that 1970?
No, earlier than that. 1958,
I think it was.
Yeah, okay, so within the last 60 years, a South American team hasn't won a tournament in Europe. And I think that team is, yeah, they've obviously got some really standout talent. I don't see it as being half as good as people make it out to be. I think that Brazil team has what I'd call structural weakness, as in they go 1-0 down. I don't think they know what to do. I think they shit themselves. I think that's what that Brazil team does. I think they're in a similar position to England. I don't think they've got the actual heads for it to say, right, we're losing. Crap, what do we actually do now? They just expect to win. And it's an issue you get, because the second you come up against a team that's as good as you, and they will come up against those teams, you can end up in crisis mode so quickly. Happened against Germany. Look at how they blew them away before. And that was because they got one quick goal and that Brazil team collapsed. It mentally just went. It wasn't a lack of ability out there. It was their mentality. It was all wrong. And you can say, yeah, the manager's done a superb job at kind of drilling them. They absolutely coasted through qualifying when the likes of Argentina were really struggling. I see them. They've got a good group to be able to go through. I think Switzerland and Serbia are stronger teams than people give them credit for. And Costa Rica can trouble bigger teams. But I think the second they come up against a good team, they're going to come unstuck. I look at those other big teams in this tournament, especially if they are, you know, on their game. I look at the likes of Spain, France. If they're starting to get to those stages, Germany, even the likes of Belgium and the likes of Croatia, I see all of them being capable of beating that Brazil team. I look at the likes of Germany, for instance. I don't say that about them. If I say it's Germany, they're on their game. I don't think there's many teams you can beat them. Same with Spain, same with Belgium, if they really go through it, and France. They can all win that tournament just by being on it. Even doesn't matter how well the other teams are playing, they can all win that tournament doing that. I don't think that with Brazil. I think even if they're on their game, there's better teams here, better teams.
For Shane, I'm the point here, and I think the big problem in that team, as a defender, he has been for a good sort of 10 years one of the best in the world, Thiago Silva. But as a leader, he wilts under pressure. So many big games. Who's meant to be the captain of a team, both at sort of club level and such, he just goes into himself.
He was injured, to be fair, or was he suspended from that humiliation to Germany?
Injured. Yeah, he was injured for that last game, but then again, they still kind of got a bit lucky to get that far in the first place.
Did it with PSG as well.
Hero, I just want to come ask you what you think of the talent in that side, because you know, other than Neymar, especially in attack, there's a lot of good players. You know, your Firmino, your Coutinho, and all the others. Just wonder what you thought of that.
Jesus is meant to be on absolute electric form at the moment, isn't he, for Brazil?
Mm-hmm. He has been, yeah.
I think they've got a bit more steel in their midfield than we give them credit for.
I actually was going to say, that's the area where I think they probably got the best strength, because if they're going to do anything in this tournament, Casemiro and Fernandinho have got to put in performances of their lives, because the thing is, you look at that attack, you've got the likes of Costa, Jesus, Neymar, Firmino, Willian will be put in a further forward position. Those players don't want to come back and defend. You look at their defenders, they don't want to defend, because you're going to be probably playing, what, Marcelo and Danilo on the flanks? They don't want to defend. They're wingers. They're wingers who play in defence. And then you've got the likes of what's it going to be? It's going to be probably Marquinhos and Thiago Silva. Again, they're both players who are more excited about the corners at the other end than they are at the ones at their end. So you need one hell of a performance from that central midfield. Again, you come up against one team who can attack as good as they can, and there are plenty of teams who can do that. I don't see how the hell they win those games.
Three midfield options of Fernandinho, Casemiro and Paulinho. And Paulinho, everybody just laughed at Barcelona last summer when they went and bought him. But he's been fantastic for Barcelona this year. Mm. Fernandinho, he's been the midfielder that's let the Man City play David Silva and De Bruyne as well in midfield and look comfortable. And Casemiro, again, he's defensive midfielder for Real Madrid for the last two or three seasons that lets the rest of the team play.
Mm. I saw Vickery on BBC, the South American pundit, who seems to be quite knowledgeable. He was saying that he thinks Casemiro is the most important player for Brazil this World Cup. So, we'll have to see.
Agree.
Germany as well, what are your thoughts on them? They had a couple of surprises in their squad. Mario Götze, who scored the winner at the last World Cup, so not there, perhaps expected. But Leroy Sané didn't make it, narrowly missing out to Julian Brandt, according to the manager. They've got to be up there, as favourites or one of.
Yeah, I think for me it's going to come down to Spain or Germany to win this thing. And I know that seems like a really obvious thing because they've been winning the last couple of tournaments. But whilst big teams like Spain, probably Brazil and France have more apparent talent, I don't think there's a better team unit than Germany. There's not a top team who plays as a proper, as a team, better than they do. And that is what will win you tournaments. And that's why they are so consistently good, because they have managed to maintain that with whatever team they have, whatever players they've got. They maintain that we play as a unit. This is all of us, not just one. Too many of those other teams have got players who have got such massive egos that they'll take it all on themselves. The only player I can see in this Germany team who's got that issue is Ozil. But for some reason, when he puts on a Germany shirt, he seems to forget about all that. So you look at those players, and yes, okay, maybe it's not as outwardly talented as the French or Brazilians, but you look at the amount of players, you think, God, I would kill to have them in any team. You look at the likes of Thomas Müller, Toni Kroos, Mats Hummels, Boateng, Manuel Neuer, even if he's been injured almost all season. Yeah, I look at those players and think, God, they would improve any team they were in.
Hasn't Müller got 10 World Cup goals to his name? I'm sure he's got five and five.
He's got five and five so far.
He's the same sort of breed as Closer.
Mm.
He just does it in a Germany shirt so consistently. And I think what people are forgetting about this team, this Germany team, is it's not half as old as everyone thinks it is. A lot of what people seem to be thinking is this is a very aging squad. You know, it's almost like the problem with Spain a few years ago where the older generation started to go out. There's a lot of young players in this squad. There's a lot of very talented players who are coming off of very good seasons. They have a team where if they put it all together, as I said, I can't see who's going to beat them. But at the same time, they have got that issue of maybe they just don't have enough star power. Maybe a France where it's all going electric in attack can overpower them. But that team can beat anyone. That's the simple fact. I don't think that about Brazil. I think a Brazil-Germany game, Germany are favourites. That's the issue with Brazil, where people say, oh, it's a really good team, but I think they can be beaten. This Germany team, if they're playing at their top level, will not be beaten.
I've got Timo Werner down as a top goal scorer for the tournament.
Well, I was going to ask you that question, who leads the line? Because they've got Timo Werner, or the more experienced Mario Gomez, or even Thomas Müller could play up front. You think Werner's going to be starting, I presume, if you think he's going to be top scorer?
Yeah, he's... Jesus for Brazil, he's been on fire last few games for Germany. I think the only issue he has is that if the crowd gets a bit noisy, he will be needed.
Yeah, no, he's an immensely talented striker. He's one of those ones. We do have this issue in England when players in the Bundesliga, we almost don't give them the kind of credit they deserve. He's one of the best attackers in world football, and he's 22. It's crazy. It's absolutely ridiculous the level he could reach. And he's doing it in a Germany shirt. He's scored in over half the games he's played for Germany. So it's not like, oh, he's a player who's really good at club level, but can't do it for Germany. That was why Leroy Sané got dropped. And people said, oh, that's a terrible decision. Sané's such a good player. This is what I'm talking about. Germany do not go for, oh, you're a really good player in. They say, can you play for this team? Are you going to play for that shirt?
He's had like 18 caps for Germany and done nothing in that 18 caps.
Yeah, so they said, right, if you're too busy out there playing for you, that's not going to work for us. You've got to play for us. This is how this works. This is why they are the best team in the world. Other country does that. Other country does that, do they?
No, I just...
You sort of compare Werner and Harry Kane. Like, Werner's doing what Harry Kane does in England over in Germany. and we just don't give him the recognition.
And players like Kimmich, what a talent he is. What a player. I mean,
he's alarm, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a ridiculously good team. It's so much better than people are giving it credit for, and there's not a single better team unit out there than what Germany can be.
I just want to bring this full circle because just finished by going back to England. You say about picking players based on their international form, you know, trying to put the club form to one side. If we're good to do that, who plays for England? If we assume there's three other four, Harry Kane plays, who are the three attacking players you'd play?
Might sound ridiculous, but I do like Danny Welbeck in an England shirt. I know, he's obviously not better than the likes of Sterling, he's probably not even better than the likes of Rashford currently, but when has he not done it for England? You look at the likes of, you know, Closer, he was never a fantastic player. He did it every single time in a Germany shirt. Thomas Müller, yeah, nobody can explain why he's half as good as he is, but he always does it in a Germany shirt. You need players like that. We might not like it because they're not that fashionable, but Danny Welbeck has never let England down. He's always performed when he's had to, so I don't see why you don't give him a bit of time on that basis.
I would have behind Kane, I'd have a three of Rashford, Ali and Sterling.
I would pick Lingard over Sterling, and I know you can laugh at me, but I think Lingard's been very impressive this season. I think he's done more in the England games than Sterling has.
I think
Sterling for me has just got a lot, just another level of class.
Yeah, Sterling's the player. If it all comes together, you want him out there because he can make things happen. Honestly, if we're playing based on players who perform for England, players who we know can do it in a tough game, our front three is weirdly Harry Kane, Jamie Vardy, and Danny Welbeck, which it seems like the most ridiculous front three we could have possibly gone for. But you look at players who have consistently played for England, played well, and seem to be pretty damn good at actually dealing with pressure. It's those three.
Yeah, well, I like that because it's given me a clickbaity title for the podcast, which you've all listened to. So
the one I'd be more willing to take out of the forward setup is Kane. To be honest, I worry with Kane if he's the new Rooney internationally.
I get the playing club, you know. I get sometimes it's better not to play your best players and focus on the form a bit more, but Harry Kane for me is like an exception to the rule. Harry Kane must start for me. There's no logical argument.
I'm just not getting him at an international level that much.
I can completely see where Hero is coming from. I think this tournament's going to decide what kind of player he is. This tournament's going to decide whether or not he's an Alan Shearer or Wayne Rooney. Great player. You know, Wayne Rooney, great player. As much as he's England's top goal scorer, never did anything for us at a tournament. Mm-hmm. Never let alone. Alan Shearer was a great player, and he might not be England's top scorer or all that lot, but he was good at tournaments for us. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. And if you ask people who's a better England striker, Alan Shearer or Wayne Rooney, you'll be hard-pressed to find someone who says Wayne Rooney. Yeah. And I think this tournament is going to say a hell of a lot for Kane. If he comes into this, he comes into it flying, the sky's the limit for what he can do. He could easily be the best striker in the world after this tournament. He could get a move to the likes of Barcelona, anything like that. He could pretty much do anything he wants if he has a good tournament. If he has a bad tournament, all the things people have been saying about Harry Kane, yeah, how good he is, how talented he is, that flips on his head, just like it did with Rooney. One bad tournament is all you need for people to totally lose faith. And suddenly they're saying, oh yeah, all the stuff about the diving, stealing goals, all of that, it's just going to come to a head. And he's got all the jokes about him already, you know, like with Rooney, with what he did with a granny and all of these kinds of things. All of a sudden, it all comes back round and people don't believe in him anymore. False idol, yet another one. It sounds ridiculous, but that kind of pressure, I've got to say, I agree with Hero of what he says. I worry about what that's going to do to a man.
Mm-hmm. I worry as well with Kent giving him things like the captaincy. I don't feel he's a natural leader on the pitch. And then he'll start taking all the corners again like he did at the Euros, and it's, you know, just stay in what you're best at.
I don't think you just default give the captaincy to your best player, and I don't think you give it to a striker as well. A striker's got to focus on scoring goals. He's not going to be organising the players around him or rallying. That's why you give it to a defender, because even when you're going forward, you can still be shouting. You can kind of let your focus slip for half a second to do that. A midfielder can do it as well. That captaincy should have gone, in my eyes, to either Gary Cahill or Jordan Henderson. I don't rate Henderson. I don't think he's a good player, but he's a much more natural fit for that captain for this England team, as is Gary Cahill.
I'd have given Cahill a diet.
Yeah, Eric Dyer, I can understand that one as well. He is clearly also a bit of a leader on the pitch. Harry Kane, I do have this horrible feeling it's all going to go wrong for him in this tournament. I bloody well hope it doesn't. I know I've said negative things about England. Of course, I'm hoping we go on and win the thing. I just think this is a tournament where, as I've said at the start, it can all go wrong so very quickly and so very easily. All these positive feelings we've been having about England, all of this, oh, it's all so calm and it's all going kind of well, and we've got, maybe finally we've got a way of playing. One bad game and that's all gone. That's the reality of the international football. One bad game and that's all gone.
Can I just say something? I said earlier it was six games since 96. It was actually since 66 we've won six knockout games.
Oh, yeah.
What a superb record.
52 years, six games.
So Poland have got a chance, is what you're saying.
And just final question before we finish the show, as we're running out of time. Two words. Firstly, who do you think is the your favourite to win the World Cup? And secondly, biggest overachiever?
Germany and then Croatia.
France and Mexico.
Oh, I like that. I like Mexico. Mexico are always my second team. I hope they do well.
I'm going to say Germany and Portugal. Alright, well, thanks for listening to the show. You can follow us on Twitter at V2 Sport Network. Check out some of our other shows, including the last ever edition of the 72 show. It's goodbye from me and from Shane Lees and Richard Hero-Hudson.
Bye.